the Future podcast is brought to you by Eberhardt Ag Solutions. Join us as we talk to top entrepreneurs in the agricultural space about their methods of obtaining success in their endeavors. And now, your host, Dan Eberhardt.
So here's the deal, man. We're just going to have a conversation. That's it. Just you and me. We don't have to use it. But honest to God, I really wanted to have this conversation with you because, right now for me, it's pretty near and dear to my heart. And of course, we're always trying to be better in this life. We're always trying to improve ourselves. But what you've achieved is beyond what most of us can imagine. I mean, how are you feeling about it?
Today I'm feeling pretty good. I actually got a little choked up this morning on my walk, and I'm feeling good, confident and proud and strong, and I feel really good. It's hard to explain, actually.
Well, you absolutely earned it, and it was very interesting because I was listening to Andy Frisella's show this morning, and he was talking about how Sean Whalen, who, if you're familiar with Sean Whalen, is one serious bad dude. Like, he is tough as nails. Did two Ironmans.
Yeah.
Did two Ironmans, Ryan. And he said this was the hardest thing and the best thing that he ever did.
Oh, I agree. As far as being one of the best programs or best things I could have done for myself, I honest to God believe it was one of the best choices or best decisions I have made thus far in my life. Like, it's that good of a program, beneficial to me, and I believe it would be that beneficial to everybody who tried it or tackled it head on.
Awesome. Here's the deal. I just wanted to set the stage a little bit about how you and I got connected and what this show is really all about. Back in 2016, I went to 10X Growth Con, and I saw a fellow on the stage, I think it was 2016, by the name of Andy Frisella. And Andy just blew up the stage. He, to me, is one of the best people at the show. You know, you always remember certain people that stick out in your mind that have an impact on you. And I started following him. And Andy's got a really unique story. I mean, as a young guy, he was stabbed in the face, and he bounced back from some adversity. I mean, he was all scarred, and he was sort of like, the hunchback of Notre Dame. Or, you know, he was really challenged on a lot of levels to build a better life, but he did. He built an empire. He's got 9 companies. And he's motivated a lot of people. And I think his legacy is going to be this 75 hard program that we're going to talk about today. But I've found him highly motivating, and he's given me a lot of value through his podcasts and his different speaking events. And so I don't think it was that long after that you and I got connected on social media through a mutual acquaintance. And they said, hey, you got to follow this guy on social media. He's a farmer, but he's absolutely crazy on the workout side, right? And you've been known to get up and work out at 3 in the morning during the season or whatever it takes, right? And so then when we started this show, I had you in mind as a guest because I think that your perspective is so unique as someone in agriculture, where typically fitness and agriculture isn't necessarily something that go hand in hand. I would just say it's, in all fairness, with all due love and respect, it's probably not a huge part of our culture as people in agriculture, or at least I didn't grow up with it. You know, at 40, I had to go to the gym and start learning it just so I didn't, my body didn't completely, waste away and become absolutely useless in terms of carrying me around on my daily activities. But you represent a totally different beast with your work ethic and your focus on fitness. And you've just completed one of the most hardest things that anybody could possibly endeavor upon in their lifetime, a program called 75 Hard that Andy Frisella has come up with. And today was your last day technically, right? Or was it yesterday?
No, tonight I'm finished. Official finish date would be midnight tonight. Yeah. Only thing I have left to do is drink my water and stay true to my diet. And she's a wrap.
You're not going to like crush a beer on your head or something?
No, I thought about it. I haven't decided quite what's next. So
slow motion. Well, we're going to talk about that because you've got more beyond this program, but it's really interesting listening to Andy today And I don't know if you listened to the program, but he's saying that there's supposed to be a month between finishing 75 hard and phase two.
Yeah. A month between phase one and phase two. So you can go directly into phase one after 75 hard. But then there's an intentional break period or rest period. And I think it's to show you what you've learned and see how strong you actually are and put some of your habits and what you've developed and learned during that time and see where you stand after that month break, right? Of technically not being on the program or being forced to take that break. I think it's going to, you know, it's going to show you who you are during that month and what you want and how true to your goals you're going to stay and what happens if you don't and what happens if you fall off and starting back over, right? And so I think that test period is going to be a vital part of the program.
This is such a crazy program. You said it, finding out who you are. So we're going to talk about the 75 hard. I want to know more about your farming operation, because obviously that's a big part of your life. That's what you do. That's your main business. And then we'll talk a little bit about what's next. But obviously there'd be lots of people that wouldn't know what 75 hard is. But lots of people do, right? Like it's a bit of a cult once you're in the group. But tell us what 75 hard is and why you decided to do this.
Okay. 75 hard, I guess it's a mental toughness program, and it's designed to challenge you on many levels, personally, physically, mentally, and it's going to hold yourself to the uttermost level of accountability. And you know, you're going to become aware of so much during this program and the progress you make in it. You know, you're going to see so much about yourself and learn so much about yourself. But anyways, the mental toughness program, to break it down, you have to do two workouts. One of them has to be outdoor. Both have to be 45 minutes minimum. You have to drink your 1 gallon of water every day. You have to read 10 pages of an entrepreneur reading or a self-help or development book or a business side of things. You have to stay true to a diet, set a diet, stay true to it. And that means no cheating, zero, not even an M&M, not a cracker, not a cookie, not a french fry, nothing. Whatever you set your diet is, 75 days, you're sticking to it, right? So, basically you got the reading, the water, the workouts, and am I missing something?
I think one of the key things too, Ryan, was posting a daily progress picture.
Oh, progress picture, yep. And that's that's one of the harder ones, believe it or not. You have to stay true. You have to face yourself down to the mirror. And it's, you know, sometimes you don't want to do it, but you're forced to do it every day, right?
That was really interesting. One of the guys talking about the program this morning was saying that he would take a progress picture the very first thing in the morning. Otherwise, it's kind of hard to do, or you might put it off or talk yourself out of it.
Yep. No, I could totally agree with it. And there's a couple of times I actually caught myself in bed ready to shut it out for the day, got up and took the progress picture. And it's just one of those things that, you know, you can slip your mind that easier if you put it off or wait, or you're like, you know, it's not that important. I can do it anytime, but one slip up and you're starting over. That's the great thing with the program. And starting over, I think, will actually do more for a lot of people than they actually realize that it does for them. I quit the program, I should say. And then after I quit the program, it forced me to review it, brought me down to my knees and brought me down to earth and made it more real and honest. And I think I really needed to fail to quit the program the first time to succeed ultimately.
Yeah. So how many days did you make it on the program the first time?
28 days the first time.
28 days?
28 days.
Yeah. Ryan.
I know.
What happened?
Oh, some personal issues in life come up and I just didn't respond to them. I let my emotions take over and that was it.
Why I think this program is the hardest thing you can do on planet Earth, because there ain't no cheat days.
Nope.
There's no little worm like loopholes. It seems like a lot of people try and build loopholes or build a different. I mean, my story is I thought this was a great thing. And for some reason I thought I could do better or make a better program. And I made a note on my iPhone with the title that said 88 hard, 88 hard. And I had all my lists of things that I wanted to do, Well, I don't think I made it 2.5 days.
Well, it's tricky, and it's you're forced to be so aware, and it becomes so clear where you're falling short. I mean, I think that's one of the great things about the program too, because you're faced right there. You're face to face with all of your weaknesses, all of your justifications, all of your excuses that you normally make are right there in the transparent. You have to tackle them. If you don't, you're starting over.
So you've been into fitness for a very long time. When did your fitness journey start?
Well, it probably started back in high school. My very first transformation was probably, 18, 19 years old. I was pretty heavy, and that's when I first really started getting into it, and it's been a progress ever since. My biggest results physically, I would say, came in the last 4 years of steady working out probably. But that's like, I've been pretty steady for the last 4 or 5 year period, but
it looks like it.
Going back to high school, anyways, I probably did 3 or 4 full-on transformations. I gained it back. Every time I would settle, I'll get comfortable, get lazy, gain it back. This time I've been really working on, developing a lifestyle, developing a mindset, changing my path and my goals and my dreams to keep me centered here versus giving up and going the other direction.
Why fitness in the first place? It seems like you got a story about being fat, essentially, yeah, and changing that through your will.
Yeah. Well, I guess being fat, the way I felt, obviously feel horrible, didn't want to leave, you're depressed, you're never happy, you don't want to hang out with people. And, I just got sick of that. And I've always been attracted to, wrestlers or Arnold Schwarzenegger or The Rock or Rocky. That's just, I'm a guy, right? I like that stuff. And that's kind of always the direction I wanted to go, but I just never knew how to take it there. So fitness has really helped me to become positive, to become stronger mentally, to become overall healthy. Just the depression, anxiety, and stress alone, working out almost takes care of that. And when I stop working out, I go from positive to almost negative. It's got adverse effects. So for me, it's about the transformation. It's about the growth. It's about, doing something good for yourself and just keep going forward, right?
That's amazing, man. They talked about this program not being about body transformation. They talked about it as being a discipline challenge. And I think that's what you've experienced. And I've been watching you on social media for a couple years. And I've watched a bit of an evolution, especially with the 75 Hard program. And I felt that your general posting or your trend was towards a more positive outlook on everything. Is that fair to say?
I think so. I think this program has really cleared up a lot of things in my mind, mentally, brought me to a new level, a more positive, a more healthy level. And I think it's just put me in a really great mindset and a really good direction. And I think the mental aspect of the program is definitely the most important personal growth you will pull from the program is the mental side. The physical is a bonus, right?
This morning, Andy was talking about somebody that he's been in contact with who's literally been suicidal often, and that this program is literally what keeps this kind of thing at bay. And I personally believe, I think that we all have challenges on a spectrum, between, depression, anxiety, and sleeplessness to outright madness, like just being, having serious medical issues related to mental health. But I, especially since I've gotten in touch with a little bit of fitness in my life, I think it's absolutely the first thing in the day. And that often if people were struggling, being fit, exercising, eating right, and sleeping, it's got to be almost 2/3 of the battle.
Oh, I believe it is 2/3 of the battle for sure. If you can be doing that on a daily basis, you're being positive, you're being healthy, you're feeding your body right, you're taking care of it, you're training it. It comes hand in hand. I think, it's hard to go that other direction or go backwards or be negative or have that stress when you're doing so much to combat it, right? And going back to the 75 Hard program, it is. It's almost life changing. I struggled for a couple of years myself mentally. I was hurting. I was struggling. I was broken. I was depressed. I had lots of anxiety. And it's almost like the program can pull you out of that. and give you empower yourself to have your own control. It gives you the self-control, the strength, the power, the grit, fortitude you need to overcome that, to get away from it, to kind of pull, like, you know, and you can almost feel it each day getting stronger, each day getting better, each day going further away from that place into a better place. I think that's a really beautiful part of the program. Like, you almost have to experience the program to understand fully what I'm saying. And I know anybody that's actually completed the program will kind of get what I'm saying. And I think everybody should do it. Try it. Try it until you fail, try it again until you succeed.
That's a really good point, because I'm afraid to start. And where I'm at right now, I got to go back to strategic coach in August, and I had set a goal to be at 185 last quarter. And I basically did nothing about it. Technically, I'm my good old dad bod, I'm at like 215, you know, sure. And I'm coming up on the cusp of that feeling you're talking about again, Ryan. I'm telling you, when you feel out of shape, or you don't feel good about how you look, or you just feel like you're carrying a bunch of extra weight, I've had times where I looked in the mirror, you know, heading out of the house, and I didn't want to go out. Yeah. Right. It's really uncomfortable. Now, I was looking at, you were mentioning in the next phase of the program, we'll talk about that a little bit more, but in the next phase of the program, you're talking about doing visualization. I wanted to ask where that fits in for you. Have you been doing visualization yet? Is this something that's new to you? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So the visualization, I haven't got in depth yet. I've been thinking about it, been aware of it, been trying to pre-training my mind to get there, right? Because I know it's going to be challenging to do a full, you know, 10-minute of detailed visualization. So it's not just, you know, you're not just putting pictures and images and bouncing all over the place. You actually have to sit down, clear your mind, relax, and take it to the place you want to go, right? And think about the little things, the details, the shoes you're wearing, the car you're driving, like, you know, you opening the door handle, you walking up those stairs. And that's a really big challenge. Like, to do for 10 minutes, detailed, day after day after day, it's going to be challenging. It's going to be tricky. But I think all said and done, it's going to be very beneficial part of the program.
Well, I'm really excited about that part. And I actually, after you said visualization, we were chatting yesterday, I downloaded a couple books about just that. And one of the most interesting ones that I started reading was called Visualization for Weight Loss by John Gabriel. He's got a really interesting hypothesis in here about how visualization is very powerful for a bunch of reasons, but especially for weight loss. So his fundamental argument is that we have all these layers of the brain. We have the lizard brain. You know, pea-sized brain is not much different than what a lizard has. It's the primitive brain. Then the limbic part of the brain is on top of that. And then on top of that is the cerebral cortex. And of course, it goes up in complexity from there. But what he's saying is our lizard brain, when faced with any kind of stress, goes back to, I need to store fat to survive whatever this stress is. So you could be dieting, but it's actually creating starvation circumstances that are forcing your body to preserve fat in terms of your lizard brain. So his argument, like, and so he's gone from 400 pounds to 186, where I should be. And I'm just thinking, this is crazy stuff, because the points that he makes just rang so true. Regarding, like, we go through these cycles, and I think it's related to the program that you did. Like, we go through these bursts of motivation. And then when we're faced with a stress, and I know myself very well, you know, coming home on a Friday night after a week on the road, pretty much guarantee I'm going to be going through A&W or some other fast food. Like, you just, your willpower is just lower and lower. So you cycle. But what he's saying is, if you can visualize, to tell your body, your primitive mind, get your primitive mind and your body working together, tell your primitive mind that it's okay. you don't need this fat. Like, you're literally, during these visualizations every evening, you're deprogramming your primitive brain from trying to store fat in such a way that you start to make more holistic choices in terms of food. You're not eating foods that are more or less dead chemicals. And we all know which aisles those are, right? Yeah. You got to go around the outside of the grocery store. You're just naturally going to be programming your mind and your body to want to receive more vibrant foods that are alive with the proper nutrients and only eat, you know, we've all got those friends that they push away from the table like halfway through and you're like, what, you know, can I eat that? I'll have that. I want that fry. But they all push away, right? And it's just about being, feeling satisfied, eating the right kind of foods, deprogramming your primitive brain from trying to store fat. And this guy's lost tremendous amounts of weight. And he literally posits, there's no diets that work. If there was diets that worked, there we'd all be on one or two of them. They would help us. There wouldn't be a trillion-dollar industry. I mean, if we, everybody sort of knows calories in and calories out. But I was really fascinated by this portion of visualization. So I think building on the theme of what you've done here, I think the real power that you've imbued upon yourself is the ability now to build almost anything that you really want, because having accomplished this through your discipline and your will, 75 days, a very simple but incredibly hard disciplinary actions, you can now, and what is it, in the second part of it, or phase one or whatever they call it, now you're going to be visualizing. Ryan, you can visualize something very distinctly that you want, and internally you should be able to know that you can accomplish whatever you want as an entrepreneur. That's Mecca. Yep. Does that ring true for you?
No, I believe it does. And I'm learning it, or I should say I'm believing it or seeing it more and more so. Like, you know, motivation takes you so far, the visualization will take you the rest of the way. You know, it's no different than my fitness. I've always wanted to lose weight. I've always had these little goals, like, you know, these little motivational things to accomplish, but it's my ultimate goal, the visualization of what I see at the end for me, that's pushing me further, that keeps me getting going when the motivation runs out. That's the beauty in the visualization. And it's like you said, you start making all these choices. I think that's part of the visualization process and a part of your dream and part of what you're seeing, all these choices. It's almost like, you know, they start becoming natural. Like, you know, it's just part of the visualization process. You believe it, you see it, and all these little changes are come around you because of your visualization and the direction you're taking it. All these little things start happening without you even trying for them to happen or being aware that they're happening, just because of that, the strength in the visualization alone. And it's no different.
I got really excited about the visualization part, Ryan, because for me, it's basically like I gotta take time out of my day a couple times a day to fantasize about what I want to have, what I want to do, who I want to be with, what I want the company to look like, what I want my personal relationships to look like, what kind of father I want to be, what kind of car I want to drive. I'm not really a big car guy. You know, what kind of guns I want to shoot off. What's with the guns?
I don't know. I just really like guns.
Wow. I know, man, but I'm telling you, what do you got? You got some kind of automatic weapons there, my friend.
No automatic weapons, semi-automatic weapons.
Big distinction. Well, I'm not a big gun guy. But yeah, you got some crazy stuff. Tell us a little bit about your guns and shooting your guns.
I like it. It's something I enjoy. I don't hunt as nearly as often as I should or would like to, but it's kind of been a slowing process as I get older, I guess. So I'm okay with that. But no, I like target shooting. I like just, you know, to me, there's beauty in precision and accuracy. If you can sit down and fine tune that sight and dial it in, have the patience and hold your breath and, you know, take your shot and you miss, well, you guess what? You're back there, you adjust and you take another one until you hit it, right? And I think there's beauty in that. And, you know, I love nice things. I like quality. I like things that look badass. So, you know, the cooler they look, the happier I am. So it's almost a double passion for me. I collect them. You know, I like, you know, for the looks of them or the aesthetics of them. And I also like to shoot them and use them. And I enjoy, like, you know, kind of the peace of mind I get from blasting off a few rounds.
So tell me a little bit more about your gun collection then, and some of your favorites or...
I guess every gun is my favorite. No, I have a little bit of everything. You know, I have from a 22 caliber semi-automatic rifle to a 9mm pistol or 45 ACP. And some of my favorite brands, and my probably my favorite shotgun is my Benelli 12 gauge. It's a super sport, carbon fiber and black, and just a beautiful, beautiful looking shotgun. My favorite rifle, my Seiko 300 short mag, fluted barrel, same thing. It's chromed on synthetic stock. It's just a, you know, it's a badass gun. It could pinch, pierce half inch plate from 300-400 yards away. So it's pretty badass. And no, I just got a little bit of everything. I had a couple five five sixes and a 7.62, and my Daniel defense, my 7.62. I really like that build. It come out really beautiful, and it's probably one of my favorite guns, just, you know, for the strength in it and the little woof it has behind it. It's just a, it's a beautiful shooting gun and a beautiful rifle.
How many guns do you have?
Oh, I don't know. A few. There's a few. I have, I'll put it this way. I have four restricted firearms.
Nice. Have you ever pistol whipped anybody?
I haven't, no.
Okay. Have you ever had to use a gun in self-defense?
No, I have not. And I hope I never have to.
No doubt, eh? No doubt. Well, that's absolutely amazing. I love the concept. I can't really relate. We did have, I mean, we had guns growing up on the farm. And that was cool. We shot a lot of gophers and stuff, but I've never been into things as things can be simply for the joy of them unto themselves, like cars and guns and guitars. Even I play guitar for like 30 years, but I'm more about, you know, the production and the recording and the end result than the guitar. But I really admire people that have that aesthetic. You said that you like things that have a certain aesthetic, or you have a certain look. Like watching you on social media, you almost have a brand. Your photos are really well done, and you know, you share a lot of stuff on social media. And I see that you like John Deere.
Yeah, John Deere. Well, is there anything else? Like, what else is there?
There are other people with other tastes that we sort of have to accommodate and sort of provide them equal voting rights somehow. I don't know how that works. It's incredible. I grew up with John Deere on the farm. It's kind of funny because my brother just bought a Lexian, and it literally got out before the ink had dried, because I think that people in town had seen him at Chicken Chef with the salesman. But we've been John Deere forever. My dad ran a John Deere dealership for 7 years. There's your daughter tiptoeing. I love it. Hello. Hey, can you get her on camera here for a second? How are you?
Good.
Good. What's your name?
Kaylee.
Kaylee, what do you think of your dad doing this crazy program 75 hard? How crazy is your dad?
I don't know.
What do you think of it?
Probably a lot.
Well, did you do any of it with me?
I tried, but I gave up.
Oh. You gave up? How did you give up?
I told her if she completed 75 hard that I would take her to New York, because she wants to go to New York.
What?
She's gave up so far, so I'm waiting to see if she'll try it again.
Yeah, I
want New York. You gotta take up your dad on that offer. It's a once in a lifetime. You'd be doing 75 hard in what do they call that? Grand Central Park or whatever.
Yeah, that'd be pretty beautiful. Now, I was thinking to make it a little bit easier and a little bit fairer for them. Like, you know, they have been coming for bike rides and walks whenever, like, you know, whenever it works out for us. And, no, I was thinking of maybe coming up with like a mini 75 hard. Like, you know, obviously it's not 75 hard adult version or hard version, right? But like, you know, maybe tone it down to like 5 pages of reading, you know, try to stay truer to her diet and, you know, work out once a day for 20 minutes kind of thing, or whatever, like, you know, something that's going to keep them accountable, keep them working, keep them goal oriented, but still not be too tough and take away from them childhood, right? Or push them to like, you know, to a breaking point where they hate it.
No, I agree. And I think that's one of the greatest gifts you can give your kids. If you can give them good work values and, you know, be a good example of fitness and all that.
going back to that, like I got a lot of great things from my father and my grandfather, but fitness, health was not one of them. Like, you know, they almost ridiculed me. It's funny, my dad, you know, he's like, "Oh, what the hell are you working out for? What the hell are you gonna go for a run for? Why do you lift weights for?" Like, you know, it just, he's got that mentality, that old school farm man. Like, you know, he's like your male farm guy, right? Like he's worked his whole life. He's outworked me by far. He could probably still outwork me today, and he's 72 years old. But so his work ethic's always been do the work. You don't need to do the exercise, right? And he almost ridicules me for it too. And so does the town, pretty much. Like, you know how small towns are. It's not common to be the fit person or the healthy person. It's more common to be the person drinking beer or, like, you know, living that lifestyle than be the one out for a walk at 4 or 5 minutes. But no, there is that old mentality, like of you don't need to do the exercise because you do the work. And, like, you know, I'm trying to break that and be like, no, you can live a healthy life. You can do the work. The work's changed, you know, considerably over the last 20, 30 years alone. So it's not as physical demanding as it was once was. So there's no reason you can't kind of, you know, change your habits or change your mentality and develop something new. I think, you know, depression, anxiety, stress in agricultural and small town life is rampant, especially during seeding and harvest and those high pressure times of the year. And I think if people would turn to fitness or health or 75 hard during that time, it'd be a complete turnaround for them.
I think most farmers are getting home at 10 or 11 off the combine and having a beer.
Yeah.
Instead of going for 45 minutes of cardio outside.
Yeah, I agree.
I grew up in that culture too. And dad was, I still don't know anybody who could outwork dad at 70, but I don't really recall him ever doing any kind of physical exercise just to improve his body. And like you say, it's so different than 20 or 30 years ago when everything was so physical. Literally right now, we just work out our fingers on our phone, or there's a switch, or like moving the auger around, or almost any of the physical activity associated with farming has been eliminated by mechanization and automation. Absolutely. How do you reconcile in your mind, like, to start a program like 75 hard? Yeah. Right.
No, so it's
how do you get over that? Well, what did you have to give up to do this?
What? First of all, like, going back to you said, what got me to start? Obviously, I wasn't happy. Obviously, I felt I needed a change. I needed a different direction. I needed a shift in momentum, right? I think starting the program and making that choice was that shift, was that start, was the right direction, right? What I needed. And, you know, I think just feeling so overwhelmed, so crappy, you know, feeling like I wasn't accomplishing what I wanted, feeling like I was stuck, like not moving anywhere, I think that was enough to get me to start, right? Like, I was kind of getting pissed off. Like, I was at that breaking point. Like, oh, you know, I kind of think you're almost there. You're up to 215 pounds. You want to be at 186 and you're getting frustrated. You know, you kind of feel that sense of urgency. And I was feeling it. I wanted to turn up the heat and I used 75 hard to do. As far as, you know, saying no when your buddy's phone, you, oh, let's go for a beer, or there's a barbecue, or there's a event, let's go to the park. Like, you know, it's hard. It is one of the hardest things, but it's the art of saying no, the ability to say no, and ability to have enough self-worth in yourself and your goal to be proud enough to say, no, look, I am sticking to this program. This is what I set out to do, and I got to do it. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard because you almost feel pressure or feel ashamed that you're the healthy one, like you're the one that wants to get better, that you're the one trying, but yeah, that you have to explain yourself to everybody else that you have bigger goals than they do. And it's hard, but it's what you have to do to accomplish your goal.
Good for you, man. I love that. The art of saying no. I'm gonna make a mental note of that and try and remember that. Do you think you've had a positive impact on other people in the community that's seen what you've done and aspire to more?
I know I have. There's been a couple of kids reach out to me in high school and tell me themselves, like, you know, geez, dude, you made a difference in my life. I see you, I watched you. And, you know, I don't get it a lot, but I've, you know, probably over the last 4 or 5 years, half a dozen times people have reached out to me and let me know, and like locally, that, like, you know, I am, because of me, they are trying, or because of me, they want to do something, or they, like, you know, there's one kid in town, he's getting pretty jacked, he's looking pretty good, and, you know, I'm proud of him, but it's, I know it's because of me, it's his dad's told me about it, and he's told me about it, and, like, you know, that makes me feel good, and gives me reason to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, because you often work out on your own in your own gym, and you've been you work out often like early in the morning. Like the crazy part about what you've done here too, for anybody who's like doing the self-reflection that we all should, am I capable of doing something like this and not having the excuses that defeat us? You started this in spring. What time did you have to get up some of these days, and what time were you doing your last workout of the day?
Well, it all depended on the day, but to get it done during seeding, and I started like, you know, pretty well day one of seeding, like called it Hell Week. You know, I figured if I could get through that week on this program, stop all my excuses, pull all the bullshit, all the compromises, all the justifications, and nail this week, no matter what the rest of the 60 some days or 70 some days or whatever had threw at me, I could handle it. That's what I was trying to prove to myself right off the get-go. Get, you know, the hardest part of this program right from day one to day seven. And it kind of worked out from that point, right? Like, you know, it was during seeding. So I'd get up at 3 a.m. if I had to. And like, you know, and then I'd go work my 16, 17, 18 hour day and then come back and I'd have to do another workout. You know, and I tried to, it's funny because I was trying to justify my and make excuses. I was like, oh, fuck, I could stop the tractor. I could go for a 10-minute ride every 10 minutes, right? Or every hour I could stop it for 5 minutes, go for a quick jog. And I was thinking, well, no, that's me changing the program, right? It specifically says 2 45-minute workouts. So I'd have to physically stop that tractor for full straight up 45 minutes. I could justify that. So I could, you know, sometimes I'd come home at 10 o'clock at night and I'd be in the gym again. And, you know, you're lucky to fall asleep by midnight. You're back up at 3 a.m. doing the same thing.
What is the fundamental difference between announcing your intentions publicly and declaring that you're going to do something and just trying to do an obscurity? Is that a big, big difference?
I think laying it all out in the open, it's you're forced to be truthful. You're forced to hold yourself at a higher level of accountability. And if you don't, if you fail, if you or if you lie, it's transparent. People see it, they'll call you out and you feel like a piece of shit. I mean, I failed. I kept saying I was going to do it, right? I'm doing hard 75. I'm doing hard 75. I failed 3 times, like, you know, but I never had my heart in it. I knew what I was doing. Right? I was waiting for that start date. I was waiting for my head to be right. What I was doing was not losing hope, like not giving myself a reason to quit. But even though I never committed or wasn't fully starting, I wasn't quitting. So, like, you know, there was 3 or 4 fails in there that I really didn't care about. But I just kept digging away at it. And because I put myself on social media, I had to own it. I had to accept it. I had to deal with it. And I had to start over. Like, you know, people, if I didn't, people would just say, oh, you're a liar, right? So by me, this time when I went into the program, that was one of the reasons I made notes. Every day I wrote my notes of what I was feeling, what I was experiencing, what I, like, you know, sometimes they're stupid, sometimes they're personal, sometimes they're emotional, sometimes they're aggressive. Every day was just what I was in that moment. And that held me at a higher level of accountability. That put me out there. That, like, you know, it's, I'm proving to you what I'm doing. I'm showing you. I'm not just saying, I'm showing. And that to me is a lot more powerful than hiding behind it, right? And pretending to do something you're not.
You shared all kinds of things in your writing through the process. How was that? How did you like that?
Well, it's hard and it's difficult. And lots of days I question if I should be sharing the things I'm sharing and if people are actually paying attention or if people actually pull from it and use from it. Or, you know, a lot of it is personal or deep or, like, you know, me, my struggles trying to be out and open. And what I'm trying to do is hoping somebody can relate. Somebody can pull something. Somebody can be like, oh, I was fat once or I was depressed once or, you know, I struggled here. I'm from a smaller community. I understand the mentality or, you know, and if I can break something or, you know, give somebody a moment of clarity or a moment of hope or, like, if they can pull something and use it from my experience and for their benefit, I'm happy.
Yeah, we had talked about social media when we had met earlier, and I was always curious why you shared so much. Obviously, we do what we do because we're building a brand and it's part of our business. It's how we reach people. But for you, you're not selling anything. We're not here trying to sell anybody on 75 hard. It's free. I mean, yep. It's very simple rules. Anybody can start tomorrow for free. Probably save money on the program because you're not buying 40s of whiskey and 2 4s of beer every second weekend or weekend or whatever you're into. But I was really curious because ever since I started following you, you have been posting daily and your stories and your, I don't think you're on Twitter a whole lot, but your Insta and your Facebook, like you're sharing tremendous things about your life. And it's really fascinating too, because we get to see all these little intimate moments of your life and just sometimes riding around with the kids on the bike or standing in the crop or washing the machines, or maybe you're jumping off. I think there was one, I remember you were sliding off a roof or something and jumping off. Like you're a daredevil too, eh? Like you like taking your life in your own hands, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I like adrenaline. I like to be in control. I like, you know, to make that decision or feel like, I don't know. I like to live in that moment, to have that edge, like, you know, like kind of badass. It's just who I am, right? It's just part of me. Like, I like speed. I like power. I like strength. I like, you know, guns, explosions, bombs. I'm just, that's just me. And I don't know. I drive and feed off and excel off it. I don't.
Well, you're living in the right place, because Saskatchewan pretty much breeds that and gives you all the room in the world to, you know.
What did you say just 2 seconds before? You said something else, the first part of that last conversation.
The first part of our last conversation when we met in person? I was just wondering about why you post so much on social media. I mean, nobody's paying you to do it. You're not a supplement king.
Yeah, no, I was thinking, I don't know. I like to share because I try to show people the real version of me, like, you know, more than just a fake version. So, like, you know, anybody can work out and pretend they're something they're not. Like, you know, they can, like, if you look Instagram, everybody's perfect. Everybody's flawless. And that's what I try not to show. I try to show some of my flaws. I try to show some of my mistakes. I try to show some of my intimate moments, you know, so people can kind of connect and bring me back down to earth and relate to me more than others. Like, you know, I know I'm very into fitness, but I don't sit there and post me bench pressing 300 pounds all day. I don't post my squats. I don't post my arms. And once in a while I will, but it's very few and far in between. I personally don't think that's the information people really need to be learning in the fitness. They need to be learning the mental health. They need to be learning the positive, the goals, the writing things down, you know, the tips and the tricks that nobody taught me, the things I've learned. Like, anybody can do workouts. Anybody go on YouTube and you can get all kinds of workouts all day, every day. Go on Instagram, all kinds of workouts all day, every day. So I try to limit that and bring it back down to earth by showing different sides of me. If anybody wants to know what I do for workouts, I'll show them.
Well, yeah, anybody can follow Ryan Watt on Instagram and Facebook, and it'll blow your mind, frankly. It's pretty wild. One of the things that you talked about a lot, though, and I just makes you curious as a viewer or as a human being, you talked about the darkness, and you talked about injuries and coming back from things. And I don't know if you ever actually shared what they were, so can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, I guess injuries and darkness, I guess they both can kind of go hand in hand. But now, some of my injuries I've dealt with, and some of them I never really had full-on answers for. And they're frustrating and they're aggravating. And I think the biggest thing when you encounter an injury is the patience to override it, to see it through, to relax and just let it run its course instead of letting the stress consume you. And if you let your stress and anxiety and fear consume you, then you will go to the dark side, and the dark side will take over. Like, you know, it takes you down to your knees and it'll take you quick. But so for me, the injuries, I started getting some issues with my shoulders, a lot of shoulder pain, a lot of nerves. And, you know, I went through ultrasounds, I went through x-rays, I went through blood tests, and, you know, basically the answer I have right now is I got some pinched nerves. There's not much you can do about it. Stretch, and, like, you know, and it's frustrating our healthcare system. It's frustrating the processes, not knowing. And, you know, I've learned a lot just how to deal with my injuries, how to stretch better, how to predict them, how to do self-care. Like, massages is a very important part for me to be able to push the way I push. Without that part of the program, I don't think I could get these kind of results. But the darkness, some of the things I go through, I guess, was I lost a friend there a couple of years ago, and I took that the hard way, and it really bothered me. And I was really judging my life compared to hers. Like, you know, she was such a beautiful person and soul, and such a, like, the world could use way more people like her. Like, you know, I sit here and I look at myself and I'm just like, you know, the world, to me, I don't benefit the world, nothing like she did. She brought so much beauty and was so pure and passionate and happy, and she never hurt a fly. And, you know, so I took that kind of hard. And then I didn't know how to handle it. And I had the stress and anxiety and, you know, all the stuff with the injuries going on. And I just, you know, I started going into a darker place and darker place. And, you know, before I realized that I was in so lost and so broken and struggling, it was hard to get out of. And you don't realize it when you're in it that deep, but it starts consuming you. And you really got to fight and dig and work. And, you know, it was the fitness. It was this that pulled me out of that. That's what I always held on to, like, you know, that attitude never to settle. Just, you know, some days you don't do nothing. Some days you're working completely backwards, but it's in your head, it's in your mind that it's there. And I use that to, you know, help me pull myself out of that darkness or that spot and, you know, find the light again, so to speak.
What would you say to somebody who's drinking Red Bull and eating Doritos and going to bed at night exhausted, waking up feeling like crap, looking in the mirror, not excited about going out on the town because of the way you look and feel, and they're just so far on the other side of it and they never experienced that fitness and nutrition and health? What would you say to them, being where you are and being where you are too? You can, you probably look at other people and you want them to have what you have. You want. And that's maybe why you're doing the social thing, media thing, is, Ryan, I sense about you, you want other people to have what you have. What would you say?
I do. And it's actually almost frustrating I find myself trying to talk to people a lot, like, you know, explain to them what they could have and what it would take. And I try to find the right approach, and finding that approach is hard because everybody's different. Everybody's personality is different, characteristics. But, you know, if you can just get that one click in their mind, that one moment of clarity. And that's all it takes usually, is like, you know, if they can believe it or see it and just connect with that one thing you're trying to tell them, lots of times that's enough for them to make that change. But my biggest thing would be, what one person can do, so can anyone else. You know, you might have to do 10,000 hours worth of work. You might have to get up at 3 a.m. You might have to say no, but if I can do it, so can you. I've been there. So I know you can do it. Like, I've been there 3 or 4 times. I've been to dark places. I've been fat. I've been that fat kid. So I know you can do it. If you just would listen to a couple of my pieces of advice and incorporate them, I'm sure you can start to make the changes for yourself. And that's what I tried to portray.
Awesome. Well, tell me a little bit about the specifics of your nutrition and your workout regime then.
For my nutrition side, I do supplement with a lot of protein powders. I use an isolate and for a post-workout, and concentrate for my meal replacement. But my diet basically consists of whole foods, healthy, clean, natural foods. So I do eat fruits, I eat vegetables, I eat, you know, my carb sources would be clean carbs. Like, you know, I try to pick the cleanest, higher quality, complex carbs versus simple refined carbs. My cuts of meat, I try to eat extra lean or lean cuts. I try to grill or barbecue or bake versus fry or deep fry or cook in oil. So basically I approach it like that. I don't try to restrict things. I do restrict the carbs on certain days, you know, higher or lower carb days. Like if I'm doing a leg day, I know I can, you know, smash a plate of spaghetti if I want, because I just burnt that much calories doing my squats, right? But that's the way I approach it.
That sounds awesome.
So if I have a higher output day, I'm going to eat a little bit more, right? Or if I want to gain some muscle, I'm going to, you know, keep it as clean as I can, but eat more. And that's what I try to do. And I'm always eating more and less, like, you know, depending on how I feel, how I look in the mirror, the results I'm wanting. So basically I'm just approaching it as a healthy lifestyle, a healthy diet, healthy living, healthy choices. And I'm adjusting it on the goal to the results I want. And to me, this takes off all the pressure of failing or screwing it up, because it's not a diet. I don't have those set rules or that mentality about it, right? I just, you know, it's healthy living, healthy lifestyle. That's the way I like to approach it.
Because you're pretty low body fat at this stage of the game.
this is the best shape I've been in so far.
Oh, what is your body fat percentage?
I haven't checked it. I haven't weighed, but it's coming. This is day 75. So, what do I weigh? I honestly, I ballpark, I'd say 200 pounds. Like I could be 190 right now. I could be 210. I'm not sure, but it's ballpark 200 pounds.
That's about, I'm just, you know, 15 pounds heavier than you, but we look vastly different in our.
That's amazing, because during this process, my body weight hasn't really changed all that much from the grand scheme of things. What's changed is my muscle to body fat ratio.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a couple of years ago, then when I did really good, I did a couple of months, got pretty good shape there before Summer Smash. And everybody's telling me, oh, dude, you look really good. You look jacked. But, you know, the scale hardly changed at all. What changed is this composition. And that's like, you know, 200 pounds is 200 pounds, but 200 pounds of muscle versus 200 pounds of fat, there's a big difference, right?
Did you go to Summer Smash?
I did 2 years ago, yes.
Nice. How was that?
I've been there twice so far. Both were really, really, really great times, and I would love to go back.
Tell me what Andy Frisella means to you.
Pardon?
Tell me what having Andy Frisella as a mentor means to you.
Oh, I think it's a huge. He's a great guy. You can learn a lot from him. He's down to earth. He's real. And he'll let you know too. If he disagrees with you or you tell him something he doesn't like, he'll tell you. So I like that about him. I like keeping it real. I like, you know, he's obviously well accomplished, well established, intelligent, connected. And like, you know, I kind of feel like on a personal level, I kind of connect to him or relate to him. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's the guns. I don't know if it's, you know, him being a little bit overweight at times or struggling. But it's like, I almost feel like a personal connection with him without ever having that real connection. Like, you know, we're not buddy buddies by any means. We're not friends. We're not, you know, that close. But I've talked to him. I've communicated. I've sent him emails. I've sent him messages. Like, you know, we've commented on each other's posts. I met him in person, shook his hand a few times. And, you know, he's a great guy. And I think anybody in the world that wanted to improve, especially on the business side of things and the personal side of things, because he calls you out on a lot of shit personally too, but would benefit just from, you know, a listen, just from a read, just from a glance. Like, you know, you don't have to go full in depth and read every single post he's ever made or listen to every single podcast, but I would recommend it. My personal opinion.
Yeah. So how has the reading of 10 pages of motivational material impacted you for the last 75 days?
The most beneficial impact, I think. It really helps you for the growth, for the maturity, for the responsibility, really opens your mind up to new ideas and concepts. And once you start applying them and feeling excited about them and getting motivated about them, it really, really opens you up to new opportunities in the program and to self-awareness and control and the whole nine. I wish I would have done it years ago. I really do.
What were some of the takeaways or the favorite books that you read?
Pardon?
What were some of your favorite books that you read or best takeaways?
A couple of my favorites would have been The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F**k. I absolutely loved the ideas in that book and the concepts in that book. It really opens you up to what's important and question your questions to make sure you got it right? Because we're selling ourselves short. We're being dishonest. We're making excuses. We're justifying actions. And by asking yourself questions and then asking those questions and make sure you have the right values and metrics on those questions and to be important, I think that's a really big part of your life and your happiness and your control you have over yourself. Well, I really like that book. Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. I love that book too. He's a beast, man. It's just the amount he went through and put himself through. It shows me how much I'm selling myself short, right? That book, Redefine Impossible, Canadian James Lawrence, 50 Ironmans in 50 States in 50 Days. Started off slow. I didn't really care for the book that much, but probably 3/4 of the way into the book, I was like, huh, this is actually pretty cool. And I really respect it near the end, whereas the first 3/4 of the book, I hated and didn't really like it. Kind of felt like a false, distasteful taste for that book. But at the end, I would recommend it to anybody. And then, what was my next?
You just had one that you posted about that you really liked that you thought was, I forget what it was called.
Strong Times Create Hard Men.
What do you, yeah.
Strong Times Create Strong Men.
What are you reading right now? Yeah.
That's the one. Yeah. Hard Times Create Strong Men is the one I'm currently reading.
Let's switch gears here a little bit. We'll circle back to the fitness and the next phases of your evolution towards the end. How do you feel that your 75 hard program is going to have an impact on your business of farming?
On my business? I think, well, obviously it's up to the person or the individual to apply what's been learned. But I think that I can just have more ownership, more control, more awareness to make better decisions and better planning and preparations. And even things like with a hired hand or working with my father, like some little things I learned that, like, you know, I can blame myself instead of blaming them, or I can better, like, you know, part of the things I learned was some of the reading was I can have better leadership. So I can lead up and down the chain of command a little bit better, so everybody can work on the same goal and have the same result with individual goals not being interfered with, right? So, I mean, I think it will benefit huge, all said and done. Like, it's going to take a little bit of time to incorporate some of these changes and some of these things. But I think, you know, on a 10-year spectrum, if I continue with it and apply what I've been learned, it will benefit this business and hopefully some future businesses planning on encountering as well, right?
Really? So you got other businesses in mind?
I do have a couple, yes. I don't really want to get into the details.
Oh, yeah. Either. Okay, good. Well, maybe that'll be like a future show. So tell me a little bit about the farm and the history of the farm and the dynamics and statistics of your farm.
Well, I guess the history of my farm, my great grandfather bought the place in 1925, and him and his wife were out there, and my grandpa was raised out there, and my grandfather eventually took over in 1955 when his father passed away. And he farmed for a few years, and he got back from the war. He, like, you know, he was fought overseas and come back, and he started farming. And I remember him telling me the story. He's like, you know, I started farming, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, he was pretty young, probably struggling. Would have been a lot harder times back then. He's like, I farmed first year, and he's like, I didn't have a fucking crop. Failed horrible. He said, I did it one more year, and he's like, same thing. I didn't have a crop. He said, you know what? I'm going to try one more year. Sastow offered him a job. He's on the head of the board for Sastow, and they offered him a pretty good job in Regina. He's like, I got this job lined up. I'm the head of the company. Like, you know, I got a good position. He's like, I'll try farming one more year. If I don't make it farming, I'm going to the city. I'm never looking back. So anyways, he farmed that third year, and he got a crop, and that was that. He remained on the farm until he was well in his 80s and retired.
And what year was it that you were talking about here?
When he was
gambling on whether the crop was going to work or not.
He was in the 50s, I think.
The 50s?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, he might not have had a job with Sastow at that time, but it was on one of the boards either. It's one of those, I'm pretty sure it was Sastow, but it might not have been. Anyways, he had a job lined up in the city, and it was his third year, and if it was a failure, he was done. And
I love that story.
He pulled off the crop, and he stuck it out and rode it out. And where we're at today on the farm side of things is my father's currently at the farm, lives on the farm with my mom, and I kind of step back. I don't want to pull his reins out. Like, you know, if I take that away from him, he won't know what to do with himself. He's talking about retiring. I hate to see it. I hate to see him quit. I hate to see him stop working, because I know what'll happen. So I have zero pressure on him whatsoever. I kind of want him there. I don't want to pull the reins from him, just letting him do it. And I can see it. He wants me to take it from him. He wants me to kind of, you know, step up and handle more and all that stuff. But at the same time, you know, I'm in no hurry to take it from him or to pull it away from him, because I feel once that happens, he'll kind of like slow down and kind of regret it and have less to do. And he likes it. He loves it. That's what he strives for each and every day. He's out there right now doing something. Like,
yeah, you're supposed to be helping him.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I'm glad you took the time to talk to me this morning. But so it sounds like you got a good relationship with your dad. I mean, how does it work working with family on the farm?
It's at times it's challenging. Like, you know, I love my dad probably more than any other guy on the face of this earth. Like, we have a really good connection that way. Like, I never tell him he loves me. He never tells me he loves me or I love him, vice versa. But, you know, I'll tell him to f***, he'll tell me to f***. Like, we're pretty hard on one another. And when we disagree, we disagree. But all said and done, we're good together. And it helps us grow stronger and better. And it just, we're both on that same page. Like, just who we are as people, like father and son, as work partners or business partners. that it doesn't bother us. That's just who we are. We can, like, you know, I can drop a wrench on his foot. He can call me a dumb asshole. Then 5 minutes later, we laugh about it, kind of thing. Right? It's just the way it is. But no, it's good. And I like the farming. Like, you know, I like how mom cooks and has the garden. I like, you know, I like all that stuff. Like, you know, just the family farm. And I wish I could present that to my kids and family a little bit more prominent. But, and I think I will the day I decide that I'm going to live on the farm or be the head of the farm or run the farm or manage the farm. Because, you know, when that transition happens and I'll be able to present a little bit different things to my children and hopefully get them more involved into the agricultural side of things too.
So your dad's 72 and how old are you?
37.
37, yeah. So when do you think you'll be taking over the farm?
Well, I'm in transition. I'm in the process. I'm just not in a hurry to speed it up, I guess, so to say. But no, I'm there and he's there and we're working through it and trying to figure out what's best for everybody, the whole family kind of thing. And like I said, I don't want to put that pressure on him. I feel like I put the pressure on my grandfather to retire. Like, you know, because I was younger, I was cockier, I was more aggressive. Like, you know, I wanted to, you know, step up my game, take over more, do more. And, you know, I didn't see it quite then. I didn't even realize my dad hadn't had the chance to run it back then. Like, you know, because, you know, my grandpa was still running more or less. So by the time my father took over, like, you know, he was getting late into his 60s. So, you know, and I kind of felt like I put a lot of pressure on my grandfather to slow down and to quit. And like the moment he decided to do that, I seen his decline. Right? I seen he wasn't happy. I seen you almost. And, it, you know, how do I sit there as a grandchild, tell my grandfather to quit? After all, that it's his empire that he's built, right? It was his empire, not my empire. Maybe 50 years from now, it could be my empire, but it wasn't my empire at that time. So I had no right to do that, and I felt bad. So I'm not going to do it again to my father, right?
How old was your grandfather when he retired from?
Oh, it was time. You didn't want to stand in front of the tractor. It was bouncing. I almost got hit a couple times. He was late 70s and early 80s, but it was time.
Yeah, it becomes a safety issue, right? Yeah, well, yes. Although you could argue in today's age with the level of automation, I mean, we're not hanging off the fender of tractors if, you know, one bump and you're going to go under the tire like the old days. I mean, everybody's strapped in with the PPE and everything's automated and yada, yada, yada. Farming is vastly different, thankfully. Is your dad big on the new technology or is that something you have to bring to the farm?
I think well, we were the first farmers in the country in this area to have auto steer. And
what year was that?
Yeah, it's come out of the early 90s. Sometime in the 90s, as University of Regina produced the first boxes and they installed it on our John Deere's and they were the first installs other than their own on university site. But we were the first private farmers to have that auto steer. And you know, I remember the first year we had it, I had the toolbox sitting on a seat to keep the weight safety switch on. I was outside taking a leak, the tractor's going down the field, the neighbors are driving by, they're like, holy what's he doing? And then next year a couple people had auto steer. yeah, I'll never forget that story.
You were taking a whiz. Yeah. And the tractor was steering itself. That is epic, man.
Bounces out of seat to make sure it kept driving straight.
Too bad there wasn't social media to post that incredibly dangerous maneuver, because that is epic.
No, but technology, he's coming around. Like, you know, I'll be honest, he's just got a credit card the last couple of years. He just sent his first text message probably 2 weeks ago. But as far as the farming side of it, he's kept up. As far as using it, not so much, but he's on it. He understands it. He lets me use it, which is, you know, beneficial.
How are you guys making decisions and what's the decision-making process between the two of you?
Well, right now we just kind of talk back and forth, communicate, and we want to spend the money. How much money do we want to spend? Where is it best spent? How are we going to kind of achieve our goal? And like, you know, markets play it into decisions, bins base plays in decision carry over the previous year, and we just kind of try to make what's best for the farm, right? Like we're not farmers that go out and spend 400 pounds of fertilizer or you know, apply 400 pounds of nitrogen every spring on chasing a crop. Like, you know, we would try to, you know, find that profit, like, you know, that best bang for your buck kind of thing. You put the kind of fertilizer down where you think you're going to get your best return profit wise, right? And obviously, yeah, 400 pounds on 12 inches, 13, 14 inches of rain, probably going to produce more. But I mean, on an average year, you don't need 400 pounds of fertilizer to produce a 50 bushel crop, right?
Have I ever got a deal for you, Ryan? On
I know. We're waiting for it.
Yeah, it was funny because we did that big talk with Sharp Soil Services out at the Willows in Regina, and you were there with your lovely wife, and I'd seen you on social media the first time I met you, and I kind of roped you in and made you an accessory to my sales pitch. That was a lot of fun, but you were taking your wife out on a date?
Yep, date night.
Good man. Good man. So with the farming then, are you guys doing a lot with precision ag, variable rating, anything like that?
Variable rates, we're getting into. This year we did a full-on section with the straight-up variable rate, so we're going to test it across the whole section. Different rates, quarter, quarter, quarter to quarter. So we're going to do some trial runs. We're getting into it, and we got the drill capable, and obviously we got the machinery and equipment capable of this stuff. But no, it's just, I'd like to see some of that technology get a little bit more precise before you full on jump in. Like, the seeders aren't quite there. The combines aren't quite there. Like some of the mapping and overlay, like a lot of these companies too, they're making money. They're selling it, right? Like they're pitching it as a beautiful idea, and it's a good idea, but it's not quite beautiful yet. Right. So like they're still making their profit. And it's not quite, I don't know if it's quite justifiable yet on every single aspect of it. Yep. But it's getting there. It's improving yearly, daily, annually. Like it's everything. Like technology is going to be a huge monster in this game, right?
I watched The Hack on Netflix, which is pretty disturbing. And it's all about the amount of data that companies have on us. For example, for every human that's on the internet, a lot of these companies will have 5,000 points of data on you. 5,000 data points on you, and they can literally find a way into your feed such that it makes you into a voter. Cambridge Analytica used it in the 2016 election in the States. And this is the stuff of like future sci-fi legend because this professor was in a room full of people, young people, and he said, who here has had the experience where they talked about something and it showed up almost immediately on your phone? And my brother told me the story about talking about intermittent fasting or something like that with somebody who they were in Russia, and they had a conversation about intermittent fasting. And in the morning on his feed or on his phone, there was an advertisement. But what the guy was saying is actually behind this is not necessarily that your phone has heard you and started to advertise to you, is that with all of these data points, the technology is so sophisticated. That's how good it has gotten at predicting your behavior next. And so for a long time for myself, I sort of thought about big data for farmers as well. Who cares? I mean, it's probably part of the reason you can get these widgets for $3 an acre, whatever. And if they're stealing it, I mean, it's not like it's an individual thing. But I also think that there's a danger for this kind of thing to be more insidious. And I know there's a lot of talk about it, and it's probably warranted because we're talking about really big business. Like if you have enough data points on farmers and their yield and their behavior, you can sell to them. You can bet against them in the markets. You can use it on a large scale for all kinds of things. Do you care? Or do you think about your data at all and where it's going and who's using it?
More and more so, I believe. Actually, I find it very, I don't know, I don't agree with it whatsoever. I don't like that they can take that data or listen to your phone calls, or your conversations, or your text messages, or your internet searches, and compile data and use that. You know, like you said, it's going to eventually come back, and some people is going to find a way to use it negatively. And it's going to cost us, the farmers. It's always costing us, the farmers. Like, we're always on the bottom end of the pole. Like, you know, it's everybody else is amping it up. We're always eating the brunt of it. And so if they can turn around and, like you said, if they can find a way to use that to their advantage, it's going to put more money in their profit or pockets, take it out of ours, right? And it's almost, it should be illegal. They shouldn't be able to do that. They shouldn't be able to target you like that. But there is going to be some beneficial sides to the technology too in the future. Like, you know, there's going to be unmanned machines. There's going to be like, you know, the precision and the accuracy and the quantity and the control is going to be there. They're talking about firing up like an Amazon style business, right? So if you could buy your fertilizer, chemical, get it all delivered on farm by April 1st, and you know what you paid, there's no middleman. I think something like that could be viable, especially with today's younger generation starting to get more and more advanced, you know, and already fully on used to that kind of the market or that kind of process, you know. And, but like, you know, like you said, you got big business, big dollars, big ag fighting that process. So what kind of cards are going to be going on behind the scene to stop that is what scares me.
You could see yourself doing business online for things like your inputs rather than going
If you could get rid of the middleman, if I don't need an agronomist or the salesman to come out there and, you know, line his pockets for no reason, the chemical company, there's only one person that needs to make their money is the chemical company. Nobody else in this process needs to make money except for the chemical company, right? Or the fertilizer company. Why does the middleman or the three or four middlemen need to take profit off of that? And it's whose expense? It's the farmer's expense. Always is. We eat the cost. If these some of these big ag companies ate the cost, you wouldn't feel so bad about it. But it's like, you know, I've really noticed we're starting to pinch pennies as much as we can across the board, you know, without trying to take away from our profits. But like, yeah. You know, it's becoming, you know, you almost have to. Like, everything is so expensive and there's so much risk involved nowadays. You have to come up with different solutions to some of these problems.
Absolutely. Very interesting stuff. You've noticed it in the last couple of years that things have gotten tighter, but it's also been pretty evident that the last 10 years have been pretty exceptional in yes. farming in terms of wealth accumulation.
Yes, no, I agree. I think my dad keeps telling me, oh, dude, you've never seen a bad year. Like, you've never seen a bad year. I've seen a few bad years. Like, we had three wet years to roll. My bank account isn't nothing like his. So I know what I'm feeling, right? No, I haven't per se had a crop disaster, crop failure yet, and I'm not looking forward to it. But no, the last 10 years in general have been better producing years, and my dad's been saying it. He's like, you know, these guys are spending, everybody's spending, you got to save. And my mom's the same way. You got to save because they, like, you know, if I buy a garner or whatever or something, a toy, they're like, right? They keep telling me, they keep warning me, and I'm listening, and I just haven't had that, you know, been in face to face with that dying scenario yet, right?
What's the most expensive gun you've bought?
Probably that Daniel Defense 7.62. I think I got about $5,500 into it.
It's got to be a work of art, man.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
Huh? Very interesting stuff. Were you pretty nervous this spring? Everybody seemed to be nervous this spring.
Yeah, I was nervous. I was stressed out. I wasn't quite there yet, mentally or physically, or like, you know, just I wasn't feeling things were clicking for me or falling together like I wanted them to be. Like, I was kind of fighting the whole process. So come this spring, you know, I was looking forward to farming. I come off of winter. Everybody hates winter. Winter sucks. So it's kind of depressing for anybody that lives with winter. But no, I was looking forward to this spring. I was looking forward to get outside. I was looking forward to the new farming season. The potential was there. We weren't super wet like, you know, the few years we were in the past. We had some decent snowfall. You know, it was a good start. And as far as my physical or personal or fitness results, like I said, they weren't quite there yet, but I was willing or trying to tackle that head on too.
What fascinates me about you is you're in better shape than 99% of humanity. It doesn't seem like it's enough.
It doesn't. I don't feel like it's enough. I don't feel like I've reached my goal yet. It was weird because the other day, yesterday, I was out for my walk and I'm like, you know, it doesn't matter if I have a six pack. Like, you know, that's always been my ultimate goal to have, like, you know, zero body fat, no love handles, no little bottom layer of fat, nothing. And, like, you know, that rip chisel physique, like movie star, whatever physique. That's always been a goal. But, you know, I was out there on my walk the other day and I was thinking, no, like, you know, it doesn't really matter. I'm going through all this work. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter if I have a six pack, but I kind of want to do something bigger, something better, something more meaningful with a bigger purpose. I don't know what that is yet, but I think the journey is kind of taking me in that direction without me even knowing it. But I just have to do what I'm doing and keep fighting it. If I come aware of something or become find my purpose or, like, you know, that moment of clarity, maybe I can run with it and challenge it to do something more beneficial or more meaningful. If that makes sense.
Honestly, I think that the example that you're setting in agriculture, that it can be done, and that there's so many ancillary benefits that trickle down in your life between your family and your business. I think that's so worthwhile. And anybody that sees this, I'm sure, can't help but feel like taking stock of where they're at. And it's not necessarily all about looking good, but I mean, we all have a self-image, and if your self-image is poor, it's a pretty hard way to start the day.
Oh, it is. If you look good and you feel good, or if you feel good and you look good, you do good. You feel, you start your day better. You start your day happier. You start your day more positive.
Brendan Turner says, look good, feel good, play great. Bringing it all home then, what is next for Mr. 75 Hard now?
What is next? Hopefully something bigger. Hopefully, like I said, something more meaningful. But for right now, I plan because I have momentum on my side. So momentum's on my side. Not only that, timing is kind of on my side. So if I were to complete the whole Live Hard, 75 Hard program, start to finish, you have 1 year calendar date from the day you started. So now I'm getting on a time crunch. So I have 30 days to complete for phase one. If I start tomorrow, the 20 or 30th, that'll be a August 29th finish. But the way I'm looking at it, the stars are aligned pretty much perfect for 30-day period here, because within the next 30 days, those calm minds are probably going to fire up.
Yeah.
So if I wait 30 days and don't do it, or take a break or take 2 weeks off, I'm going to be trying this program with the brunt of harvest. And I don't see how I can pull that off or swing it, or I don't want to really challenge that in the midst of harvest, you know, because I'm going to have added things with phase one already on top of Hard 75. There's the visualization, there's the cold shower, there's the, you know, the couple of added tasks to do, the powerless tasks, I guess, on top of Hard 75. So to add that in during harvest, I'm not really into it. But if I start right now when momentum's hot, when I'm used to it, when I'm into the program, I think I can tackle the next 30 days and manage a few days on a calm mind if I have to, right? And then after that comes the rest period. So then it should work out good. I should be able to take my downtime or whatever and finish off my harvest and readjust some thoughts and come back at it and see what phase two has to offer. But no, I'm planning on finishing, completing the whole program and just paying attention to where it's taking me, maybe be more aware of my personal journey and experience, and to see if I can further branch that off into different or better improved areas.
Have you done 5 minutes of cold showers yet?
Oh man, I don't want to. I hate cold water. I'm not looking forward to it. Yeah, I'll make a post what I do. I haven't had my cold shower yet. I kept telling myself, dude, build yourself up, try it out, give yourself a few extra days to get used to it. But I haven't done it yet. I haven't convinced myself. I'll tackle it on day one of phase one, and I'll let you guys know how it goes. But I'm going to tell you, I hate cold water.
They were talking about that this morning, and in general, I guess Andy's technique is he has his regular shower, but then he just turns it as cold as he can stand, and the whole process is dial it into where you're really uncomfortable, and that's where the journey begins. And I'd highly, 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 highly recommend that you check out a guy by the name of Wim Hof. W-I-M is his first name. Wim Hof, H-O-F. We've talked about it lots, but yeah, my brother takes cold showers like for the last year, like for 2 years exclusively, just because of that technique and everything. And it's a breathing technique that kind of helps you get ready for the cold water. And I'm really interested about the visualization too. I think that's extremely powerful. And in terms of being detailed about seeing where you want to go, and then being able to apply the kind of discipline that you've garnered over the last 75 days and this whole year. And I think it's fascinating that you share too, that you failed. Well, not maybe failed isn't the right word, or whatever happened. You quit 3 times. That kind of gives me a lot of hope, because for me, it might be just one of those things, just start. But I got to tell you, there's some major barriers. And one of them too is posting a progress pic. I've always been adverse to that, but I know why people do it, and they're right and I am wrong. I should be sharing, if I'm setting out a goal, you should be making it public because it holds you accountable. And it's so easy to quit in those moments of when you're low. if nobody knows, you can quit in obscurity. Nobody knows that you fail, but no. If you make it extremely public, and the guys were talking about an interesting part of the journey where when you start out in the 75 hard, everybody's excited. Everybody's excited for you. You're excited. You're going to do this. You're going to kill it. But it's day 50 and day 60 when you realize nobody really cares but you. And then it starts to sink in that this journey is about you. It's nothing about, you know, whether other people know that you have a six pack or whatever. It's a deep, deep journey about you. And so days 50 to 60 apparently were some of the hardest. Did you experience that?
Oh, hey, for sure. Yeah, the whole program, start to finish, is full of highs and lows. Like, it's just the first week, you can have 2 days hot and 4 days cold. And then the second week, you can have 4 days hot and 2 days cold. And yes, you go through so many highs and lows. And even in the same day, I learned you can be having a horrible day. You can be having a low. You don't want to do it. You're depressed. But yeah, if you have that mentality, that mindset, that awareness, you can kind of pull yourself out of that and make it a win. And when you can do that, when you can turn a loss into a win, you got power, you got strength, you got momentum. You can turn that around. You go from, you know, almost quitting the program, almost failing out, to all of a sudden, boom, you're 4 pages ahead. You're 4 days ahead. You're already on it, right? So when you can learn you're in control and you can do that, it's just a matter of changing your mindset. There's power and strength in that.
So no, you did it. You did it, and you never cheated.
Nope.
Not a half a fry. No. Not a dip of whiskey.
I think I stuck a fry in my mouth once and spit it out.
You did.
No, I never had any alcohol. The diet, I believe, with honest, my God opinion, like I said, my diet fairly loose or fairly, like, you know, it's, like I said, it's whole foods, clean eating. But no, I didn't eat no chips, no pop, no chocolate bars, nothing I would consider cheating for my diet, right?
But what's it like giving up alcohol?
It sucks. Especially in, like, you know, I was at a couple friends' house. They're all drinking. I had a couple people over and they're drinking and just socially drinking, right? But no, I like to eat. I'm a foodie. So every time I go out to a nice restaurant, I like to accompany that with some nice beer, or nice whiskey. And not being able to do that really dampers the experience. But it's also one of the most rewarding, too, is being able to say no, the art of saying no and meaning it, sticking to your guns, and for the overall goal or overall purpose of the program, right, or the mission.
Well, and waking up every day and feeling fantastic with absolutely zero hangover isn't that bad either, because always price to pay.
No, it's not the worst.
Any amount of alcohol imbibed. I have been so excited to have this conversation for a very long time, just on a personal level, because I wanted to learn from you and take a little bit of what you have, and hopefully, you know, I feel pretty inspired right now, and I also feel a bit of a turning point, and I don't know if I'll be posting about 75 hard anytime soon. That's a big decision for me to make, and yet I guess everybody's got their Everest, and there's all kinds of things we got to conquer, but one of the things I'm most interested in my life personally and professionally is just having control over my own emotions, no matter what comes up, because there's just so much stuff that comes up in business. And I feel like what you've done would give you a lot more control over the only thing that's you can control is your own coolness. And if you can be cool as a cucumber, as a CEO of your own life, just like Andy Frisella talks about, through all these ups and downs, that's akin to magic, brother. That's akin to magic. That's a beautiful thing. And I'm happy for you. I'm super proud of you. What you've done is super incredible. And it's just been an honor to talk to you on the last day of it. And I don't know what the percentage of people that start the program get through. I think it's probably pretty low. I don't know. They never really shared, you know, if half the people make it through the program, be kind of like Navy SEALs, right? There's just a high attrition rate. I mean, and it's early. Like, he started in March, so there's probably some people that have completed it, but there's, like, even you, knowing how hardcore you are, you had to start over many times.
Yeah, I did. And it was a good experience. It brought me down to earth. It made me view it completely different and open up and be more honest and transparent. And then this is, like, you know, when I did commit, I decided to make the notes, hold myself at a greater accountability. I decided to tag Andy Frisella in all those notes so he could see what I was doing, call me out on my bullshit if he wanted to, right? So I stepped up my game and readjusted and come back centered and level and ready to kick ass. And I just stayed true to the plan and wrote it out. And like I said, there's days I wanted to quit. There's days I almost failed. There's days I was in bed and had to get up and read a book. There's days I was in bed and had to get up and take a progress pick. Like, you know, just you start holding yourself at that accountability and it starts clicking. You know, day 75, I feel great. I feel amazing. I feel proud. I feel strong. And just, I actually want to see what's next. I want to try something harder, like, you know, so I'm actually kind of willing or wanting to reinforce it over the next 30 days. Then I'm kind of actually tell you the truth, I'll be scared of taking that break, it's, you know, because it's 100% on me during that break period. Like, what am I going to do? How am I going to handle it? Am I going to quit? Am I going to fail? Am I going to go back to my old habits? Am I going to keep pushing and doing what I was doing anyways? I don't know that answer. I won't know it till I deal with it, right? But it's one of those things. It's I'll take it as it comes and we'll see how it goes.
That is a really interesting question that, and a really interesting statement that you're technically more afraid to go back to the in-between time than be on the program.
No, I like the purpose. I like the working for something. Like I said, the positivity, the goals, the structure, just, you know, it's hard. It sucks at times, but it's also good. The discipline, like, you know, keeps you in check. It keeps you centered. It keeps you level. It keeps you, your feet on the ground. And that's where everybody's feet need to be, right?
How is the crop looking going into harvest here? Are you excited?
Going into harvest, she's just changing color here. Canola's dropping flowers. The wheat and durum's changing. Barley's actually looking, you know, kind of yellower. But we got probably 8, 9, 10 inches of rain, depending on where we're at. So we're sitting pretty. It's, you know, looking at 50, 60 cereals and probably 30 to 60 canola. And hopefully the lentils are there too. So
lentils, eh?
Yeah, we never know. You never know with them things.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully that lentil market will start coming back.
Hopefully they all do. Hopefully we have some help in our political situation.
Well, I talked to Scott Moe and I told him that I was pretty nervous if Trudeau got back in just for the state of all our mental health and their businesses. But then again, it could be a really big opportunity because I think there's going to be hell to pay. I think people in the West are going to stand up. And I don't think separation is reasonable, but definitely maybe a little bit of a chat on equalization, yeah, and stuff like that. The rest of the country's kind of gone blue, but I wish I could say I was really confident that we have, you know, a slam dunk opportunity here in conservatism federally, but I'm just not feeling it yet. And anyways, well, that's a whole
my personal opinion is Scheer is not the answer either, right? Like, I don't think he's quite the image. I don't think they branded him properly, to tell you the truth. If I was head of conservatives, I would have found a better image, a better brand. So people want to buy the brand. They want to buy the image. Like, you already know what the Conservative Party standing for, but you got to have somebody that represents it. Like Stephen Harper, he was a brand. He was an image. People liked it, right? People, the way I see Andrew Scheer, I don't see it that way. And I know a lot of people don't see him that way. You almost see him like he's avoiding things or he's sneaky or he's, I don't know. To me, he might be a better solution for Canada, but he's not the answer for Canada.
I think Bernier would have been a better choice in terms of brand, and he's a little bit more extreme, but I think that's where things are gone and that's what people are attracted to right now. And
I think so too.
We know in the West, I mean, 80% of us would take Trump over the evils of the Trudeau empire. And it's really funny. It's so cyclical. Apparently in the early 80s, they actually had some leadership and people involved in the whole process of trying to have a referendum on separation. And again, there was a Trudeau in government and there was a national energy program that was driving everybody crazy and choking out the oil in the West. But despite all that, I'm still super optimistic about the future. I think politics comes and goes. Everybody that came to this country is an incredible spirit, just having that pioneer spirit. And I love Saskatchewan. I love Canada. I have high hopes for the future. I think we live in the best place in the world. And we're just so blessed. And if, you know, to me, if we aren't happy with the level of prosperity that we have, we're buggered. And I've personally found I've had highs and lows in terms of what I've acquired and lost in my life. But I'm at 43, I now understand, Ryan, that acquiring these things doesn't actually make you happy. And if you look at your life too, like, you've got the shiny John Deere, you've got the Equitable Farm, you've got the guns and the trucks and beautiful, everything in life. But it's an internal requirement for us to become happy and pleased with that, no matter the status of it going up and down, because your portfolio as such on the farm and your fortunes are going to go up and down. But most producers are so lucky and wealthy in so many ways in terms of their lifestyle and their freedom. I think it's an amazing business to be in.
No, I do too. And I honestly, I feel like really aligned with it. Like, I love the freedom. I love the choices. I love the being outside. I love the lifestyle. Like, I like working 7 months, busting my ass for 7-8 months of the year. And, you know, I get that 3-4 months of downtime. And I can still work every day if I wanted to. I can work every day, all day, every year, like all year if I wanted to. But I kind of like, you know, having the control in the wintertime when it's 40 below and nobody wants to work anyways. And I want to come in and work on myself and my fitness results. Awesome. But I think that's just the way you need to do it, right? It's just going to be full of good times and bad times and highs and lows, and just kind of ride it out. And like you said, it's material things. The lifestyle doesn't make me any happier of a human. It might buy me a temporary high so I could feel temporarily better. But at the end of the day, the health, the fitness, the positivity, the diet will do more for me than anything the lifestyle can throw at me, or the highs, like, you know, what I can acquire during that time.
If I can, right on, man. You want to sum up the 75 hard experience for me?
I think it was a very beautiful experience, very emotional, spiritual. The way I connected with nature and kind of the world during my outdoor phase of it, part of it, was really, really unexpected and really, really beautiful. Really found my, like, almost like an inner peace during that time, or that it was a time of clarity, a time of reflection. And that really opens your mind up and helps your mental state and helps your clarity and helps with your goals and your results and even sticking to the program, just because you're there, you're in the moment, you're present, and all the distractions disappear, all the stress, anxiety disappears, and, you know, you just kind of accept it for what it is. So that was just beautiful. But no, the whole program, I think, is genius on many levels. It challenges you on many levels. It forces you to be aware on many levels, and it will force you to grow. If you do it and be honest and truthful and do what the program is supposed to do, I think you'll walk away a better person. I think everybody will walk away a better person. And that's, yeah. My biggest thing is try it, stick it out, do it.
Well, you certainly challenged me, and I got to figure out how I'm going to do this very thing and reap the rewards. But thanks a lot for sharing that with me, and proud of you. That's pretty exciting stuff. Pretty inspirational, and I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people. So thanks for coming on the show. It means a lot.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for taking
great. Your time. You did great. That's really interesting stuff. I knew it was going to be super interesting. I'm kind of a little bit of competition with my brother about the guests we're having on, and I'm like, okay, check out this guy. I said, what do you think? And he said, you know, I'm really interested in hearing the journey. So I think we'll leave it at that. But I'm really interested to hear what's next, how it translates into results for you and your life and your business and other things that you're going to accomplish. We'll have to catch up in the future. So thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, right on. Thanks for having me. And it was good. It's good to challenge me and get out and do this. And like, I like to, you know, continue to challenge myself to do things like this.
I know it was a challenge for you, a completely different challenge to come on today. I totally get it. But you did great. And I kind of knew once we got rolling, it would be absolutely, I don't know. I find this format a really, really great way to connect with people. So, thanks.